Hong Kong is 92% ethnically Chinese, but stroll through the Central Business District on any given Sunday and you wouldn't know it. Thousands upon thousands of domestic helpers socialize on cardboard scattered across parks, walkways, and sidewalks on their one and only day off. 55% are from the Philippines, and virtually all women. A similar dynamic, but for men, plays out on the high seas. Filipinos make up 1.4% of the world's population, but roughly 30% of the world's shipping crew. Take a cruise, for instance, and there's a very good chance you'll have a Filipino maid, cook, or server. It's not just low-skill work, either. 1/5 of California-registered nurses are from the Philippines, despite comprising only 4% of its population. On any given day, 10% of all living Filipinos are employed overseas, 2.3 million of which are temporary workers. The reason may seem obvious. Money. The average nurse can make 15 times more working abroad. Even domestic helpers make far more than they would at home. But why the Philippines specifically? The country is neither the world's largest, fastest growing, nor even poorest potential source of labor. Being the cheapest is a tough competitive advantage to maintain in a world of 7 billion people. There will always be someone somewhere more desperate. And yet, the Philippines has remained the world's go-to source of labor for decades, almost monopolizing entire industries. So, what's the real reason? Sponsored by Brilliant. Learn math, science, and computer science the intuitive way with a link in the description. In 1973, the Middle East went on strike, cutting off the world's supply of oil. Between December 1973 and January 1974, the global price of crude more than doubled, from $26 to $61 per barrel. For the Philippines, which imported 80% of its oil, this made a bad situation much worse. The Marcos government was already busy fighting a communist rebellion, had declared martial law, and was suffering a balance of trade deficit when consumer prices went through the roof, and unemployment soon followed. But the rise in oil prices had a second unintended consequence, the fundamental transformation of the global shipping industry. When the price of oil rose, demand for tankers fell dramatically. But because a ship ordered today is only actually delivered years down the road, their supply continued rising long after they were no longer needed. As you can see, demand per tanker fell for roughly the next 10 years. And during this period of excess supply, shipping became far less profitable. To cut costs, companies increasingly began registering their ships in flag of convenience countries like Panama and Liberia, where they could bypass national labor laws. Unions negotiated jobs for Japanese, Norwegian, and Greek captains, but the bottom ranks were suddenly open to the world. And who better to fill them than the masses of recently unemployed Filipinos? Shipping companies didn't just get access to a cheap, willing, and able workforce fluent in English, the international language of the sea, but also their favorite kind. Temporary. Migrant workers are a capitalist vision of globalization, perpetuating national borders when convenient, bypassing them when not. By importing labor from abroad, you profit from wage differentials between countries, but don't have to worry about anti-immigrant backlash. You can hire them as soon as you have a job to be done, and fire them just as fast when it's over, with none of the annoying paperwork. Virtually all the power in this relationship lies with the employer, some of which even take away the passports of their workers. Until March of last year, for instance, domestic helpers in Saudi Arabia needed their employer's permission to leave the country. Needless to say, this serendipitous combination of push in the form of unemployment in the Philippines and pull in the form of demand for cheap labor produced an explosion of Filipino migrant workers. In 1960, 15% of all seafarers were Asian. By 1987, that number had more than quadrupled to 67%. The next wave came from where the first originated, the Middle East. The Gulf states had grand visions for what to do with their new wealth, but no one willing to actually build their underwater hotels and giant empty picture frames. That's where foreign labor comes in. Today, 26% of Filipino migrants work in Saudi Arabia, 14% in the UAE, 6% in Kuwait, and 5% in Qatar. A significant portion of the rest work in Hong Kong or Singapore as domestic helpers, doing the laundry, childcare, cooking, cleaning, and everything in between for middle-class households. Some families even have two or three. But this is really only half the answer to our original question: why Filipinos came to dominate these specific labor niches. 50 years ago, the reason was basically coincidence, timing more than anything. But even if the Philippines was the cheapest source of labor in 1970, it hasn't remained that way for five consecutive decades. What began as a temporary response to a unique set of circumstances, in other words, soon became a deliberate strategy. The money workers send home, called remittances, has grown from a nice side gig to a pillar on which the entire national economy depends, representing 10% of the country's GDP. At $35 billion a year, remittances could be considered the Philippines' second largest export, just behind electronics at $38 billion, 3 times higher than third place machinery, and 13 times larger than fourth place copper. In the words of one former official, without these overseas jobs reducing domestic unemployment, there would be revolution. And so, to sustain this flow of cash, the Philippine government has become an unofficial broker of labor. When the president called herself the CEO of a global Philippine enterprise in 2003, she wasn't kidding. The state functions in many ways like a corporation, one whose core business is selling one particular commodity: labor. Government departments travel to trade shows, negotiate with foreign countries, and sometimes even place labor directly. It even does marketing, producing posters, videos, and ads reinforcing the perception of Filipinos as loyal, hardworking, and docile. Yet, despite all this, quote, the state does not promote overseas employment as a means to sustain economic growth and achieve national development. The government, in other words, is uneasy about its participation in what some have called legal human trafficking. It takes credit for the inflow of remittances, but no responsibility when workers are abused. When they return home, workers are greeted as heroes, not unlike members of the military in America. Sending money home is characterized as an act of nationalism, and each year the president celebrates Migrant Workers' Day. But it's not just the government reinforcing this system. You might think Filipino migrant workers would aggressively fight back against these stereotypes. And some do. But many don't see themselves as being exploited. Despite high rates of abuse, harassment, and harsh working conditions, overseas work is often viewed in a positive light, as an opportunity. An opportunity that's by no means guaranteed. Many see themselves as competing with Indonesians, Pakistanis, and Nepalese. Reinforcing stereotypes, even about oneself, is a powerful way of preserving those limited opportunities. But more than anything else, what reinforces this outflow of labor is economics. Imagine that a bundle of cash 10 or 15 times the average local wage fell out of the sky and into every 10th house in your country each and every month. Why would that lucky 10% of the population look for a job? Think about what kind of weird first, second, and third order effects this sudden airdrop of cash would have on the economy. Currency devaluation, inflation, lower real incomes, and greater inequality between families receiving and not receiving remittances. The problem with treating labor as a resource, in other words, is that it leads to the resource curse. What would these families buy with all that money? A new car, an extra room in the house, or even an extra house? Perhaps the most common purchase is a college degree. But this is not quite the escape from poverty and investment in the nation's future that it may appear. Remittances are directly responsible for the education of millions of young Filipinos, but they're also responsible for the lack of local demand for that very education. The end goal of a college degree very often is to immigrate, often as a nurse, to the United States in what has been called migrate to educate to migrate. First, a mother, father, or both go overseas as domestic helpers or sailors, sending whatever they can home to their children. Those children are often expected to use that money to train as nurses, immigrate to the US, and take their turn sending remittances home. In 2015, more Filipino nurses were employed abroad than passed the nursing board exams at home. Until the practice was banned, nursing students were so desperate to acquire the experience needed to go overseas that many paid hospitals to allow them to work. For the lucky few whose parents sacrificed their labor abroad, who themselves studied for years and years and years acquiring degrees, and who have the incredible luck of entering the labor market at the right moment, this is a powerful pathway to a better life for their families back home. But think about what's really happening here. Individuals are expected to work overseas just to pay for an education for the chance of leaving, giving them the privilege of supporting their families. The state may take credit for this system, but for their families, these individual moms, dads, uncles, and aunts are fulfilling the role of the state, providing basic things like food and education. And because it relies on an immense amount of hard work, sacrifice, and luck, this is not a sustainable, equitable process. It can't really be scaled or systematized, and it relies on an increasingly tenuous assumption that their labor and skills are appreciated and welcome abroad. All it takes is a change of visa rules in a foreign country or a pandemic to nullify all those years of sacrifice. Last year, for instance, the Philippine government capped the number of nurses allowed to work overseas, forcing all but 5,000 to stay home, risking their lives for very little money. So what did they do? Many go back to school in hopes that a second or third degree will make them more competitive. According to one study, 39% of working Filipinos are overeducated for their jobs, yet a quarter are undereducated. This is just one more way the traditional system of education fails students, by preparing them for jobs that no longer exist. Learning should be flexible, interesting, and based on practical, universal skills like problem-solving, logic, and math, all things which today's sponsor, Brilliant, was designed to be. Brilliant has courses on everything from programming to problem-solving, physics, and calculus. What I like about Brilliant is that it makes learning fun by focusing on applying knowledge through interactive puzzles, riddles, and games, not just by rote memorizing facts. One trick I recently learned is to start your day by doing something small but productive. Doing a quick lesson or challenge on Brilliant in the morning is a great way to instantly feel accomplished, learn something new, and start your day on the right foot. Click the link on screen now and the first 200 people will get 20% off their annual premium subscription. You can even gift a subscription to a friend or family member. Go pick what interests you most and start learning today.